The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology.
I live on a street near the university. Are you getting this, kid? Don't know if I did. Oh, yeah.
Bourbon barrel.
Do you have this thing on, John?
Working on it.
Okay. Am I coming out through the air? I think I am now.
Oh, yeah. I can hear you just fine.
All right. So now I'm all messed up. A weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science, only funnier. And speaking of funny, today's topic is the sweet technology of brewing. And we have joining us from
Is brewing funny?
No, I don't know.
Oh,
I
you said speaking of funny.
Well, I think this is going to be a funny thing.
Like it's slapstick.
I know that only because I'm somewhat familiar with the culture of the fine local brewery known as Sweetwater. I've known people there. I actually know the comedians that perform, right? So, like, I'm trying to think.
Joe Pettis.
Yeah, so, Joe Pettis.
And Jeremy Messi.
Yeah, Jeremy Messi, right? Messi. Really good guys. And do they still do the underwear show there?
No, that's been moved somewhere else.
Oh, okay. So, did they do it at Sweetwater for a while?
I don't know. It's been just Monday Night Comedy for, I guess, 7 years now.
Right, but I think they spun off.
I didn't even know we had Monday Night Comedy.
Oh, yeah. It's actually a really big thing. And I've worked with both Jeremy and Joe. They used to do a show I hosted at Spud's. It was sort of a potato thing up in maybe Alpharetta, something like that,
like
which we put
factory?
Out of business. So I'm hoping you guys are doing better. I have the record. I think I've put three different establishments out of business that we've done comedy showcases at. So from Sweetwater, we have George Matthews, who is the packaging manager at Sweetwater, and actually did his master's degree in mechanical engineering back in 2009 here at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, correct.
And joining him is Nick Burgoyne, the lead brewer on the Woodlands Project. So I look at Nick and I think this is a guy who knows more about brewing, probably because he's sampled a lot of the wares over the years.
Could be.
Is that a cultural thing at Sweetwater?
Absolutely. I mean, if you don't enjoy beer, how are you going to make good beer?
Okay.
That'd be a real problem.
I can't really argue with that. But I have to ask George, so how did you go from a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from probably one of the most dodgy, stiffest places on the planet, Georgia Tech, and we've done entire shows on that,
to
brewing beer? Was that a conscious thing?
So I started my undergrad in 2004, actually, and by the time I was finishing up, the economy was not great, so I ended up going into industrial equipment inspection. Spent 4 years doing that, and then I rolled into process and packaging engineering. And from process and packaging engineering, I consulted a few times at some smaller breweries, and decided that that's kind of what I wanted to do. So,
cool.
A position opened up at Georgia Tech, or not Georgia Tech, at Sweetwater, and another Georgia Tech alum actually was leaving, and I stepped into his shoes. So,
wow, because. Nice. Ed and I, working at Georgia Tech, maybe not always as fun as it sounds like it is at Sweetwater. No?
We don't have forklifts, that's for sure.
Is that what determines fun for you?
I think they have like a special attachment on a forklift so you can move kegs around or something.
Oh, do they?
I remember seeing some sort of like a...
They do.
Specialized,
we don't have them, but they do.
Okay.
Specialized and, attachment you can put on a forklift if you're a brewer.
So Ed's resume will be forthcoming. You guys can expect that soon. You know, he's like, physics, it's nice, but it's not like...
I have always wanted to drive a forklift. They just look like a lot of fun.
They're a ton of fun.
Indeed.
At my summer internship, they were very clear that, you know, there's a few hazards in the facility for processing these minerals. But the most dangerous thing is forklifts because they turn weird. And the most likely thing that happens is you go up and talk to someone and say, oh, can you run over there really quick? They say, sure, and turn a corner and just take you out.
So so it's interesting. You're not the only person I've met who, you know, got their degree in engineering is like, well, I don't know. And then suddenly they discovered beer brewing. One of my students, I had her for a study abroad program in London. And she said, I don't really like chemical engineering. I think I'm just going to get married, have kids, and leave chemical engineering in the dust. Then she started to work for Anheuser-Busch, and she realized beer brewing is a good thing. Based on what she's told me, it's not quite as fun as Sweetwater. Is Sweetwater fun just because you guys are local? Because everyone there has a passion for this beverage?
I'll let Nick answer this because he's been there for a while. But
Yeah, I'd say probably because we've had a culture of very family, like together unit, like we're fighting the good fight, like bringing craft beer to people, you know, trying to set ourselves apart from the bigger, more macro.
Okay, okay. And I have been to the 420 Festival. In fact, I used to do comedy there with Jeremy and Joe. The product is good. I'm a big fan. And I'm not one of these beer crazy people, but it's a good place to go. And all the different varieties, I think, are pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I would say so as well. And coming from engineering, Sweetwater offers the opportunity to be large enough scale to be in craft brewing, but still kind of allowing me to do some things with the equipment there. So.
Okay, cool. Because I do want to know, is beer a Newtonian fluid or not? That's the question that's been weighing on my mind for weeks before this thing. But before we do that, let's begin the program as we often do with...
Science in the News.
And unfortunately, Jennifer Levy, the official Georgia Tech Bee Whisperer, is not here. She would get on my case for this, I think, but I could not pass this one up.
Always sneaking the politics in.
Well, okay, but it's a science article. It's by Kevin Quealy from the New York Times on November 14th. The title, The More Educated More Education Republicans Have, The Less They Tend to Believe in Climate Change. And that caught my eye because we talked about the dynamics of ocean and climate change 2 weeks ago, as opposed to last week when you guys just came in and did a weird show on physics when I was in
the
meeting.
We did a whole show of science in the news.
Oh, is that what it was? You
just started? Jennifer and I each brought in three or four stories.
Okay, cool. I'm putting it in the archives, man.
Had our pirate broadcast.
We had our pirate broadcast.
We stole the show from you.
That's quite all right. Look, I needed the rest. Let me just put it that way. And I wasn't watching my email. Had I would have showed up. So there was an exhaustive scientific report unveiled this month concluded that the Earth is experiencing the warmest period in recorded history. And that's basically what our guest said 2 weeks ago. However, we can't really pin down exactly how much those changes are. But the survey... this is actually from a Gallup survey, pointed out that, you know, typically you get a variation of people believing certain things with regard to education. All of them are predictable, except for a few. And this one caught my eye, that as you go from high school to some college, to college or graduate school, Democrats tend to believe more in climate change. Republicans tend to believe less. Explain that one using physics, Ed.
Explain less?
I don't understand.
Yeah, they believe in less. Yeah.
So you go through, you start college, don't really think climate change is happening,
right.
And you finish and you're sure that it's not happening.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, a whole big component of college is learning how to think and structure arguments. I can totally see it being you get better at defending your preconceived idea.
Ah, that's an interesting point. That wasn't even mentioned in the article. Right.
Yeah.
So you take whatever your preconceived idea is, you learn the logic, this sort of thing, and then you go ahead and figure you can defend it better.
Yeah, you get better at defending it. You find sources that agree with it. You find ways to anticipate arguments. And yeah, no.
But do you learn how to read a scientific paper?
I supposedly learned how to do that, and those things still put me to sleep.
I have a friend who's a Georgia Tech grad.
Yeah.
Who he's a patent lawyer now.
Yeah.
And he did not believe for the longest time in climate change. So for Christmas, I bought him a book that it's like a choose your own adventure.
Right.
Where it presents you with something.
Change the
and then you have to change to a page.
Yeah.
And it's designed so that if you're making logical choices, you end up at the end of the book and you're like, climate change is real.
Okay. What do you think of that?
I don't think he actually read it. He just laughed. but I think if you have when I've talked to people that don't believe in climate change, they just have a belief that it's not possible. You can't you can't change a belief just by presenting data and facts and experiments, because deep down they have a core belief that they're just holding on to because that's how they feel what is true is through that belief.
Right.
And the science is complex, right? We have had
it is. And we pointed that out 2 weeks ago, right? That for someone to doubt that we're changing by 2 degrees every, 20 years or something like that, that's an estimate. We don't really know. We just know the direction it's going in. And the article points out that Americans do not treat climate change as a scientific issue either. In the past, consensus from scientific community on factual issues effectively ended serious disagreement among elites, whether it was among things like whether different races have similar biological behaviors or whether homosexuality is rooted in mental illness or just a genetic issue. The shift toward treating climate change as a political rather than a scientific issue is relatively new. And I think that's exactly it. They treat it as a political issue or a belief. And sure. John, you actually offered the best explanation I've heard. If you have that, and we would call that a confirmation bias, right? That you want to believe what you want to believe, you get better at defending it. So there it is. It still scares the crap out of me, though. And I'm going to leave it at that, ladies and gentlemen.
It's
I'm
weird. Not gonna... I don't know what to make of like these survey polls where you have data on how people mm-hmm. react to information. Like, you know, we had the guy running for, I think, a Senate seat in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
accused of being a child molester.
Right. And like, I believe that's right now.
Yeah. And his like, he got more support from his base, right?
Yeah, he seems to be getting a lot of support.
So that just means there's a lot of complicated things going on that is lost when you just look at, like, how do you feel about this very complex issue?
Right.
I think it's difficult to tease out exactly, like, why someone might have a stronger
right.
denial of climate change with more education.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with John's theory that they're better at defending it. We taught them something. Right? Yeah. So there it is. Anytime I teach somebody anything, I'm willing to take credit for it, whether I deserve it.
So you're saying
not.
They're like the Sith. they took the beautiful Jedi Force
and
turned to the dark
they're
side.
They're like Jedis. Jedis are the evil ones.
Whoa, Jedis are the evil ones.
What are you, a Sith Lord
now? We don't have the time to get into this. I'd much rather talk about something pleasurable and fun and interesting.
Okay. Next week on Inside the Black Box, the dark side or not? all right, so I'm guessing Sweetwater does not have an official position on global warming. And waving your head off in the corner is Tucker Berta Sarkisian. How do you pronounce that? Sarkisian. All right, I got it. Well, so she's, do I say corporate? Are you the PR person?
Yes.
Okay, and there's, all right, great. So the PR director. But despite the fact you may have no official position, you are very environmentally minded, correct? So you guys, tell us about this project you have. Let's see. Is it the Fish Project? What's it called? All right, Fish for a Fish. And if you, Tucker, you can jump on to...
I can hop in to deliver the official corporate okay. talking points
ooh.
Here.
okay.
Yeah,
fish for a fish.
Tucker Sarkisian, and I was so super excited when the new offensive coordinator, is that his title, at the Falcons, Steve Sarkisian, came to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah?
Because cool. I thought everyone would be able to pronounce my name, but
okay.
now he's kind of not doing so great, so it's really backfired
now
on me.
Nobody can Google you, right?
No.
If you have someone with a famous... name well, similar right. to yours, then you're Google-proof.
Exactly, but I digress.
Well, they won last weekend, though, right? So, I mean, they're... Didn't they?
Go Birds, sure.
Yeah, okay.
No, we totally lost.
We beat the Cowboys.
Oh.
Yeah.
So go Birds. Go.
Has,
okay.
has Sweetwater ever made a beer like the Dirty Bird or
oh,
some
my God.
Of...
I can't even believe you bring that up. So, you know, last year we're in the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
Right.
And we got into this bet with them. It was a very public bet. I mean, you can go back and look at, mm-hmm. you know, the Twitter battle. So much fun. I lost my voice. I was telling them on the way over here from doing so many interviews about this battle that we got in mm-hmm. with Sam Adams.
Ah, okay, that yeah, makes sense, in Boston.
Yeah. So we got into this bet with Sam Adams and said, well, the loser of the game then has to rename one of their flagship beers.
To the other team.
To the other team, whatever. So
ooh,
a
I was 420 not aware of this.
Was converted to Patriots Ale, and I'm still kind of gagging. Yeah.
But was it the same 420?
It was the same 420.
Oh, okay.
We just literally rewrapped it. But we had all
you know that
Patriot
that pissed
nerds.
Off someone who's like, what the
oh,
hell
yeah.
in the grocery
no, but look,
store?
I respect you for following through on the bet, though.
Well, we
that's
did.
Fair
of course
enough.
We did. But we had all these Patriot nerds just like lining up at the brewery. You know, hey, we're going to get the Patriots ale. Stick it.
Oh, and it was really just 420,
was,
which is a fine
yeah,
beer. I'm a regular drinker of 420.
Yeah. You had to rename
so what was Sam Adams going to rename their beer?
Dirty Bird
Dirty
Brew.
Bird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Dirty
okay.
Bird Brew.
All right. I think that's good.
It's
almost like a backhanded compliment, right? It's like the Dirty Bird Brew.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It would have been great, but RIP.
So tell us about your environmental program, Fish for a Fish.
Well, Fish for a Fish is just one of the environmental programs that we have. This is a cool one, though. For October and November, we again rewrapped 420 and IPA. Our two most popular and best-selling brews historically. Mm-hmm. And if you look at them, there's artwork on them that looks like a trout.
Oh, I've seen these,
yeah.
but it's a portion of a trout.
Well, so you turn the can and you get the trout head, the trout middle, the trout tail.
Right.
You stack them up appropriately, three or more, and they make a full trout. And so what we're asking people is that you take a picture of this, post it on any social platform, hashtag it fish for a fish, and then we're counting all those up, and we're working with local DNRs to stock streams with appropriate species, one for one. So one fish for every hashtag that we get.
Okay, so Department of Natural Resources.
Yes, exactly. Right. Okay. So the first one that we're doing, we're working with Georgia DNR to stock a stream here. I think it's the Hooch, but honestly, I'm not totally.
Sweetwater Creek, perhaps?
Could be Sweetwater Creek. Hey, you know that's where we got our name.
No,
yeah. Freddie Bench, our founder, loved to kayak Sweetwater Creek, and so he named the brewery after Sweetwater Creek.
Okay.
But we're stocking the first stream on December 8th. And, you know, we were a little bit nervous. It wasn't slow to get started. People really caught on to this project soon. But, you know, we weren't getting these massive numbers. And then Jimmy Carter, you guys, post a picture of his IPA trout, hashtag fish for a fish, and it just took off. It really was kind of an incredible moment to see that.
Thank you, President Carter.
Thanks, Jimmy President Carter.
Would not have pictured him as a beer drinker.
Peanuts and beer, man.
Okay. All right.
Good point.
They go together very well.
Yeah.
All right. So on that topic of environmental issues and water, so is water and its purity really important to beer brewing?
Absolutely. It's a fundamental quality.
It is most of beer.
So what do you, okay, that's true. Thanks for pointing out that your chemical engineering education has served you well.
Back to the basics.
So where do you guys get your water? I mean, do you guys do extra filtration? Are there certain things you do to make sure you've got good water?
We get it from the Chattahoochee, and we do some treatments on our water, especially specific to the brewing process. Add minerals, yeah.
Okay, so what is specific to the brewing process, right? Because, I mean, in the lab, we want it as pure as possible. And you realize if you've ever drank distilled water, it tastes like crap. Because there's nothing in it, but I would expect minerals to be that way. Do you guys actually put minerals back in it?
We do. To mimic the type of beer that we're trying to brew. Mm-hmm. So historically, beers have been made in different regions based on their water chemistry. Wow. So we mimic our water chemistry for what kind of beer we're trying to brew.
Wow.
That's interesting.
That's amazing.
So in the same way that sourdough made in California has the local yeast, the beer also has the local water. That makes sense.
Or we try and mimic it to be that way these days. But historically, when they didn't know, they just, you know, figured out what worked.
I've heard that's why all the bourbon is made in Kentucky, because they have a...
Because the river.
They have this river, and they have a very, like, limestone foundation that the rest of the country doesn't have. And so it makes the water sweet. I don't know, good for bourbon.
Not my area of expertise, but I hear George likes to distill.
That's no comment.
Maybe I've been misinformed. I don't know.
Yeah. You do realize you can become a licensed distillery in the state of Georgia for a $1,000 fee. It's relatively cheap.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Okay. I actually have some students working on this issue, so we should talk. One of my students doing research for me noticed, and we've been aware of this for 100 years, that when you take whatever it is as the beginning, right, you know, something that comes from grapes or wheat or potatoes, ferment it and then distill it, yeast don't just produce ethanol. They produce butanol, isopropanol, acetone, which is used in nail polish remover. In fact, if you trick them, you can have them produce more acetone. And we've had industrial processes to do
that. Yeah, but that's the heads. You don't drink the heads. You drink the hearts, Pete.
Right, but when you eventually distill this thing, you're still bringing some of this stuff along. So we're actually working on a process by which we're chemically extracting the other stuff, and then we'll put back, you know, conditioned water, you know, nice mineral water into the thing. So we should talk if that's
something to see. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear.
Okay, cool. All right, that's great. So walk us through, how does one even brew beer? What are the basic steps for doing that?
So basically, you have your malt or malted barley.
Okay, so you've got some grain.
Yep, got some grain. So then we put it through a mill, which is going to expose that the starch in the center. And then it's going to go into what we call a mash tun. And what happens there is it's like a big mixer, and we're going to convert that starch to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
by ramping it up through several different temperature rises.
Okay. Okay.
And then after that, so you basically have like an oatmeal consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go over to the louder tun, which separates the liquids from the solids.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to sparge in that. And that's basically diluting that sugar to whatever you want for your beer. So okay. Say you want a high gravity beer, you're not going to sparge that much. You're going to get the straight extract mm-hmm. from your mash. So after that, you go over to the...
And the high gravity corresponds to high sugar.
High sugar is potential alcohol, yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
So high gravity, it has nothing to do with density, though, does it?
It does have to do with density. Okay. It's the density of the wort.
Oh, okay. So the density of the wort will then convert to more sugar and more alcohol.
Once the yeast goes to work on it, yeah.
What's okay. the wort?
The wort is basically sugar water before it's introduced to the yeast, before it actually becomes beer.
Mm-hmm.
So after the lauter, we go to the kettle where it's actually boiled to sanitize it, number one, because you have some microorganisms you do not want.
Right. Especially if it's been anywhere near there.
Right. We also add hops there. So that's going to impart the bitterness to offset the sweetness. Again, depending on what you're brewing, you're brewing an IPA, you don't want it to be super sweet.
Okay.
You're brewing a brown ale or something, not a lot of hops in there.
Okay. So would the sweetness be whatever sugar that's in there that comes from your starches?
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, you literally just described the chemical process to me, right? So you take these starches, you grind it up. We're all about increasing surface area, whether it's industrial catalysts or breaking these things down. And then temperature and mechanical action will take a polymer of sugars, break it down into smaller stuff. So to me... we should have you in teaching a course on beer brewing.
Honestly, that would be a hit at Georgia Tech.
I would love to make that.
Other universities do have
They do. They have beer, they have wine, and they have coffee.
Oh, my
God. And these are the most popular courses there.
We had a chemistry of wine course when I was in undergrad, but people were kind of scared to take it because the chemist had these horrible scars. He looked like kind of a monster.
Was it from a wine explosion or something else?
From a chemistry experiment gone wrong in his youth.
Oh, okay.
He didn't like to talk about it. Yeah, but he was just kind of creepy to look at. So, chemistry of wine.
Always judging the scientist.
Listen, I'm just throwing it out there. I would prefer to learn from a mad scientist with a checkered, mysterious past.
Who was obsessed with the chemistry of wine?
Yeah, exactly.
But John's not normal for any of you considering applying to Georgia Tech.
That's fair.
Okay, so the density of wort will eventually convert to higher sugar. So do you guys do a timing thing that if you ferment more, you'll get rid of more of the sugar?
Well, if you boil longer, you will evaporate more of the water, so you're going to have like a more dense wort.
Oh, okay.
So that has something to do with it, but we typically...
So you're reducing water when you do that.
Yeah, we typically do, for high gravity beers, like what you have right over there.
Yeah.
We boiled that for like 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. Okay.
Probably maybe more than that.
Okay. So you're reducing the water in it, basically.
Indeed.
So this should be a 2100 mass balance thing. We should be doing something like
Absolutely.
That.
And there's a limit, right? The alcohol content you can get
14% in Georgia.
14%.
Yep.
Okay. I meant chemistry limit, like the yeast die.
Each yeast has a threshold. That's our house yeast right there. It's an English, excuse me. It's an English yeast. It goes up to about, this is about it for that one. But some of the Belgian yeast will get really high.
So there's a law in Georgia that limits the amount of alcohol
14%.
In a beer?
Well, that's basically wine, right? Because historically wine's been about 14, because you're right. That's the limit of yeast. And beer's usually a little lower, depending. Now I learned how you manipulate your wort.
It depends
in the water.
On the yeast too. There's super freaky yeast.
There are
ferment
so
up what, to you
what's
know.
The, yeah, what's the upper limit?
It keeps changing.
They keep
genetically modified
so
yeast.
It used to be 14, but then I think is this the
14
Europeans?
Is the law. 14 is the law in Georgia.
But literally, if you're going to do wine, 30, 40 years ago, 14 was about the highest you could get yeast to go. Maybe 14.6, 14.8 before the yeast died from ethanol poisoning. But there's crazy Europeans that are developing yeast. They're using recombinant DNA technology. Are you guys part of this big push to brew? Well, you're not because you're abiding by the law. brew the heaviest alcohol beer there is? Well, I know crazy people.
Some people are manipulating their yeast. Some people are ice distilling, essentially, right. Which that's a little bit of a cheat. But
okay.
What does that even mean, ice distilling? Like you keep the temperature down to the yeast?
No, they'll just freeze it and decant the decant the liquid off of it and just keep doing it until it gets hot. And
what do they call it? They call it an ice brewed beer or an ice? There's a name for that.
That's a little bit different. You mean but ice house? They do have that.
The king of beers, Ice House?
All right, so whether he realizes it or not, Nick is describing sort of the lower end version of distillation, right? So, I mean, John's
I didn't know we were going to go there, but we're going there.
No, you're exactly right. It's all, instead of vapor liquid equilibrium, it's liquid solid equilibrium. Huh. You got a choice. You can either boil it, and the stuff that comes off has higher alcohol, which apparently is what George does in his spare time to, you know, do the distillation thing.
Allegedly.
But you could do the same thing. You can freeze it. And the ice.
We don't do that,
We'll have less alcohol in it, so you can fortify the beer that way.
But you can do that.
But yeah, some of these guys have just crazy yeast over there as well, and that's not like an infection you put an ointment on. I mean, actual brewing yeast to do that sort of stuff. Okay, so you've got this wort. You'll do a different amount of boiling, and then you just let it sit for a while.
Oh no! So after that, we go to a whirlpool where it's pretty much a whirlpool, and it spins out our solids to the bottom, be it hops or hop break, which is like baked protein.
Okay.
And so it spins for about 20 minutes in our big system.
So what do you do with the solids once they come out?
We actually add it to our spent grain, which is something the louder when we're done with the louder, we still have a lot of nutrients in the spent grain. Mm-hmm. So we add that with that, and it goes off to a cattle farm.
Okay, as feed.
Yeah.
Okay,
that makes sense.
And there's something like we use like 7% of the nutrients in this grain. Uh-huh. So it's really good feed for cattle, livestock.
Okay.
I'm kind of going back, but
that's okay.
Yeah, that is a good one. It's one I kind of forgot, but
okay.
So real quickly, after the whirlpool, it goes through a heat exchanger to bring it. It's boiling, so it's basically a radiator almost, we're converting our wort to cooler temperature, about 60-65 degrees for our ales, and then we add it to the fermenter where the yeast is introduced, and that is when it turns from wort to beer.
Okay. And do you still have solids in it at that point?
A few.
Okay.
But not as many as later on the filtering process.
Okay, so there will be a final filtering process.
Yeah.
So that's when you're doing the fermentation.
Yep.
And is fermentation always done?
It's about a week.
Okay.
For primary. It depends on the yeast. Mm-hmm. Most of our ales are about a week. And then it spends a week conditioning, which is dropping at fermentation temperatures like 62 degrees Fahrenheit. In most things, and then we drop it down to, you know, as close as we can to zero to drop out that yeast. And that's why all fermenters are conical shaped. So if you're ever in a brewery, you know that a fermenter has a conical bottom.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how you get the yeast off of it, so we can get the clearest beer we can.
Okay.
Which it's not perfectly clear at that point, but then there are various processes you can use. We have a centrifuge, which... clears it up.
So you're talking about, heat exchangers, whirlpools, which to us is a cyclone separator. And this is chemical engineering.
Yeah.
We need to have a brewing club in chemical engineering, John.
Honestly, yes.
This is our new thing.
There is a gastronomy club.
There is.
Molecular gastronomy.
And there's
right?
one on fermentation now. Just general fermentation. They don't just do beer. They do all those weird fermented drinks. That Jennifer talks
about. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I just figure it's going to motivate people. But here's the problem. The problem is if we get chemical engineers involved in this, and what better way to use your chemical engineering skills? And what are you sure you're not a chemical engineer, Nick? Because really what you just described is chemical engineering.
You can think that if you want.
Okay. I don't mean that as an insult either. But
I don't mean that either.
It's got to get people motivated because, you know, when you do, hydrocarbon processing or, organic chemistry synthesis, you can't drink the stuff at the end.
Just about every class is framed as, so you're at an oil refinery and you want to extract these things using these methods. However,
Right.
And it's not as compelling.
Keep your chlorine escape mask on, because otherwise you'll die.
Which actually kind of brings to a question I've wanted to ask, which is, so obviously you can taste the beer at the end to know how you've done. Do you taste all of the intermediate samples?
Yeah, we taste the wort, and we taste it during fermentation, and then obviously at the end. But yeah, it's very important to taste it throughout the whole process.
And what info are you getting from tasting it when it's the mash or whatever?
Well, I mean, that and the mash, for instance, that'll tell you if it's sweet, it's converted from starch to sugar.
Right.
And it just kind of gives you an idea of where it's going. And once you do it, you know, for so long, you just kind of, you know, you're like, all right, something's wrong here. Let's figure out what we, you know, what could have happened.
And by the way, that's the way we used to do chemistry 100 years ago.
By taste?
Yeah, if you look up...
Dip your hand into the vat.
There's a book called The Merck Index where it will list properties of chemicals, right? It's very useful. And for really, really old chemicals, they'll have things like smell and taste, which we're not supposed to do now. But at some point, somebody tasted horribly smelling tertiary amines and said, oh, yeah, that's definitely an amine.
Well, we have a lot of like great technology now at Sweetwater, so we you know, are testing it various ways, but that is like the old school way to do it. If you're like a home brewer or work in a smaller brewery where you don't have all the technology that we're lucky enough to have.
Certainly so then, quicker.
George was laughing when you were talking about tasting these things. Is there a story behind this, or does the wort taste as bad as the word sounds?
It tastes like cereal, honestly.
So kind of like oatmeal in a sense.
I don't know. It smells and tastes like cereal to me. I mean, sugar water, it's, you know, basically cereal.
But let's face it, your taste buds are more sensitive than a lot of analytical equipment. So that makes perfect sense.
What were the grains that went into the wort? Was it wheat?
We use wheat. We use malted barley.
No corn?
Munich.
Well, you said cereal, I thought.
We actually have to use corn on our Mexican lager, but that was a first for us.
Okay. So they do have a corn beer.
Well, I mean, most cereal is corn-based, right? So when he said cereal, I thought corn flakes or something.
You have different cereal malts and caramel malts. There's a million of them.
Okay. So in the process you've described so far, what would you say most determines the final flavor? Is it the type of grains you're using?
The grains. The yeast. So the grains you're using are gonna like dictate your color. So say you're brewing a dark beer, you're gonna use roasted malt, chocolate, which is what's in that right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading the back of this Sinner's Son, and it said that you throw in some coffee and espresso beans.
Yeah,
I've never had a coffee and espresso bean beer.
We got from a local roaster, Java Vino. Well, they're not the roaster, but they actually have a farm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Also, so yeah, it was really fun. I got the owner of Java Vino up on a scissor lift, and we added the ground coffee up to the top of this fermenter.
Oh, cool!
It was.
So what stage does the coffee join the party?
We did it at the end of fermentation. It's cold. We basically did like a cold press coffee in a big fermentation tank. Well, cool. I guess it wouldn't be a fermentation tank. It would be like more of a bright tank, which is like where the beer goes after the centrifuge.
So now that we're talking about the scale of these things, because he has to go up in a lift, and let's maybe get George in here. How do you do this on this scale? Because I've seen the maker movement at Georgia, in Georgia, there's one in Decatur. They'll come and they'll give talks where they're doing it in, you know, a 5-gallon pot. How big are these containers that you're working with?
Well, so Nick was mentioning our brew house. The brew house is a 330 beer barrel brew house.
Okay. So that sounds big.
That's what we get out of it. You know, because we're evaporating some of that.
Right.
So yeah. Usually, like typically 10%, you evaporate out. So you're get 330 barrels.
Yeah, that's roughly 10,000 gallons.
Wow.
Per brewing.
So if you got to move it from one thing to another, so you're doing different things, different levels of conditioning. Do you actually put this stuff through a pump?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have tons of pumps.
Okay. And do you worry about the pump grease on the seals? Because when we're pumping gasoline,
it doesn't come in contact with anything like that.
I would hope they've had that figured out by now, Pete.
Well, I would hope so, too. Man. I'm just asking.
The grease. Dang it. We forgot about the
We do
the
an experiment, and you get stopcock grease in your infrared spectroscopy.
It was only a problem the first batch, and then it's fine.
Yeah, most of our seals are probably EPDM, and we don't have enough high temperature or high enough alcohol content to really, get into the nasty stuff.
Okay, so EPDM, ethylene, propylene, diamine, something?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So polymers, okay.
Yes, polymers.
Which, by the way, you bottle all – people package food in there as well. And I notice you guys do cans and bottles. One of the things that nerds like myself have been working on and do materials have worked on the plastic beer bottle for a long, long time. And you go down to the stadium – and you can get stuff in a plastic beer bottle because, one, you can't throw it at a ref and kill him. Mm-hmm. And, two, they collect them all there because it's actually very special. It's got this absorbent layer in the middle that absorbs the oxygen to keep the beer from getting skunky. Mm-hmm. So they can't just recycle it normally. But are you guys purists? No plastic for you? Glass?
We currently use – a lot of the guys that make the plastic bottles, they blow mold their blanks on site. Uh-huh. So, like the Anheuser's and those guys.
Right.
So we're obviously not that scale.
Okay.
The glass bottle is kind of, the industry as in general for craft brew is going to aluminum cans.
Okay.
It's cheaper, freight costs are lower.
Right.
There's no UV degradation at all.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it's completely opaque.
And honestly, the can seaming process where we drop the lid onto the open can and then roll it over twice. I mean, it's a really, really good seal.
Okay.
So there's no... These days with the technology that these guys have for their coatings, there's no flavor leaching in any sort of aluminum that's observable.
Okay, so you guys believe the purists can still enjoy a beer in a can?
Tucker's
nodding your head. Yes, that's what marketing told me.
Yeah.
By God, no.
there's still some guys that, glass is king. And,
I think it's the experience.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well, Coca-Cola still tastes good out of a bottle, right? It does taste different.
I don't know if it tastes different. I think it's your impression. You like the glass.
I jump in here for a second?
Yeah.
So the beginning of craft brewing, a way to set ourselves apart from the macro brewers was to have that brown bottle.
Yeah.
And now that there's more education out there, people realize how great cans are and everything George has said.
Yeah.
It's going that way.
Yeah.
But in the beginning of craft brewing, that was the distinction.
But I think that's what I'm saying. You'd be able to risk just a little bit of ultraviolet degradation, which you mentioned. Because even though it's brown, it's not completely opaque. Just for the coolness of the glass,
I don't know.
Experience
with soda. I
don't think it changes much.
The carbonation is different in soda. Is what I've heard.
Oh well, that's true because
that's why when you get a can of Coke,
yeah.
The carbonation can be very different from a bottle of Coke. Yeah. It's not at an optimum level, and that's why it could taste a little different.
Well,
I don't think that would be the case with
the
beer.
Plastic bottles do actually leach CO2. So when they bring them to these, you only get the plastic ones at stadiums because they're very short term, and they want to get them out there quick, and then they recycle all the bottles in the same place. So it's that way. But speaking of carbonation, where does the carbonation come from? Is that a natural product of the
yeast? Some of it's natural from fermentation.
Okay.
So we're going to have some natural carbonation when we get to the bright tank. But then we're also going to artificially carbonate with like a beer stone, which is basically like your fish tank, but like a huge, you've seen a fish tank, how that works. Like,
right, we have your air CO2. Pump going into this very porous thing, and it distributes it in tiny bubbles.
Correct.
All about the surface area, John. That's the whole thing.
About
the pressure and
so what
it dissolving in the
fraction of beers do most beers get some additional carbonation in addition to that?
A lot of our beers do. That beer right there is completely bottle conditioned, so what we did there was added a little bit of yeast, a little bit of sugar to flat beer, and it actually carbonated in that bottle by pressurizing it and getting it to absorb in the...
That's why it has the extra safety cage on top, just in case.
That's true.
That yeast got a little too overactive there. And
yeah, the pressure inside that bottle is probably on the order of 3.5 bar. So that cork... could potentially.
You look nervous all of a sudden.
No.
It could potentially come out if
if you were to aim it right at Pete's head and shake it up.
Bar that's approximately 3.5 atmospheres. I'm impressed at your use of the metric pressure units, though. That's impressive.
I guess it's the easiest conversion rate or the conversions for.
Well, CO2. And what we're looking at is this woodland center sun, which this is a. And maybe we can go on to this level of processing. This is a.
I want to drink this so bad.
It's an FCC violation.
I know.
Wait till after the show. This was barrel aged?
Correct.
Okay, so tell me about barrels, and you guys have a big barrel project now. How do barrels work? How do they figure in this?
Basically, you have a finished beer, and typically what you do is put it in the barrels to impart the wood flavor.
Okay. Okay.
So all beer, or this is a special thing?
Well,
that's done
different,
to some
different beers, different barrels,
like different wood.
This is bourbon barrels, American oak.
Okay.
And so you're gonna get like a lot of vanilla, mm-hmm. a lot of spirits, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so this is a barrel that had already been used.
These are Basil Hayden barrels.
Okay.
Okay.
Which is a small part of what we do at the Woodlands. We're more like a sour facility. Uh-huh. So we're using a lot of wine barrels, kinds of spirits, and wild bacteria and wild yeast.
Okay.
So what is the Woodlands project? You mentioned it a few times.
Basically, it's our new...
and there's no trout on this.
It's our new facility that...
There actually kind of is.
Are you guys actually, going...
Oh, is there?
In the logo for the Woodlands, the water
kind of is in the shape of a trout. Wow.
Yeah. It took me like three months before I realized that. Yeah.
I'm still looking.
Pete's got his reading glasses
the,
on.
The river itself looks a little bit like a trout. Yeah.
So we have a lot of different types of wood over there. We have regular barrels like what you would see, anywhere. Then we also have puncheons, which is like a barrel, but it's about twice or three times the size mm-hmm. of a generic 55-gallon barrel that you would see.
Right. But was that called a puncheon?
Puncheon. And then we also have fooders, which are pretty much like huge tanks, like you would see a fermenter, or it doesn't have a conical bottom, but like you would see, but it's made of all wood. So the cool thing about those, you making a lot more volume, takes a little bit longer back to your surface area.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, right? A small barrel doesn't take as long to impart all that
big
flavor.
Barrel? Per
Big
volume,
barrel.
Lower. Mm-hmm. See, are you sure you're not a chemical engineer? Because that's basically our sophomore level class right there. So you guys are trying to do for beer what the wine and distillates have been doing for a long time. They take all these interesting tannins and other things that come out of these barrels. A lot of the barrels, when they first do them for wine, they'll scorch them. They'll actually burn them. So you get all sorts of these interesting colors and flavors out of them.
You caramelize the wood.
Yeah, that's what you're doing for beer now. Cool. So how does it change the beer? Is it a better taste? Is it a different taste?
Well, in some cases, like you said, the gives it that vanilla, like all those tannins, like you're saying, mm-hmm. in the wine barrels.
Right.
And also something cool about our sour barrels are the yeast and bacteria will actually like dig in the wood and resonate those, so it'll actually sour the beer.
Okay,
interesting. I didn't know that Sweetwater made a sour beer, and that's good to hear because I've been cheating on you guys with my current favorite beer, is the Atlanta beer from Orpheus Brewing. Yeah.
Okay,
and it's a very sour beer. So tell us, what makes a beer sour, and what are some of the sour beers that Sweetwater's making?
Well, there's different ways to sour beer. Lactobacillus is one thing, mm-hmm. which is the same thing that used to make yogurt or...
Right.
So they add that during the fermentation process?
Fermenting
you
lactose
can actually,
sugar?
You can actually add... You can add it different times. The point there is to drop the pH of the beer, and then we also use Brettanomyces, which will go in and kind of clean up some of the off flavors that the lactobacillus leaves behind.
And nobody wants a yogurt beer.
Yeah, some people do.
I don't know. I'd try it.
A yogurt beer?
You try anything, John.
I try it once.
You
ate the bugs when we had the bug lady.
I ate the bugs, too.
I would try bug beer.
Bug that's mainly beer. Protein, though. I don't know where the sugar is.
Don't go with that,
from.
Guys. Don't listen to him. Do not right. brew a beer from,
I'm running
from
it
bug
down.
Parts.
No bug beer. Wow.
Y'all are missing a market.
So back on the packaging. So you had said before, George, that you know, you're going with cans because you really don't see any real problem with that. So you've got this one bottled in a thing like a champagne bottle. You've
correct.
Got a cork in it with a little cage on it because of the 3.5 bars of pressure.
Yep.
Is there a reason for that, or could you put that in a can too, or do you figure you're appealing to the upscale market, which does not include Ed and I, by the way?
It's both. Now, realistically, the cans, you know, max working pressure is probably perfectly fine.
Okay.
But a lot of the sours will get, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, they'll go to a little bit higher carbonation level.
Okay. And it's through this yeast sort of pseudo-natural approach.
Yeah, we're bottle conditioning 100% right there.
Okay.
So that's what it is. It's kind of a safety measure.
Okay.
And those bottles can withstand a lot more pressure than like a can.
Depending on, we now have 3 bottle sizes or bottle configurations for the corked bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are at least 10 bar, capable of 10 bar.
Okay.
The champagnes actually go up to 15.
Yeah.
And we use, you know, we have the, in the bottom of the actual bottle, there's a push-up, kind of like the champagne bottle.
Oh, right, exactly. So this indentation.
Yeah, just which, you know, gives a little bit more.
How do you get the cork into the bottle? I've always wondered, especially champagne, you know, they've got that
question.
Wedge shape, and it goes, you never get it back in. So you must have a fancy machine.
So we actually have a champagne filler at Sweetwater. It is, you know, we can run about 1,500 bottles per hour on it, but the first stage is a sanitation stage, and then the second stage is the filling stage,
right.
And then the last part that it comes to is the corker itself. And there's a hopper up on top. The hopper sorts the corks into the appropriate orientation. It'll compress the corks into
from like the sides because they're flared.
They're actually straight corks. 25 and a half millimeters in diameter.
Oh, do they swell when they're in the bottle? Maybe.
No, they actually we reduce the cork's diameter by shrinking it.
Okay.
Like using it's basically like a kind of like a flaring tool, but you know we compress the cork, and then while it's compressed, we drop the corker down onto the bottle. And while the compressed cork is that size, we can actually push it into the bottle.
Oh, okay.
So we actually have to, especially with some of the beers like the stouts that are lower carbonation levels,
okay.
We have to be really careful of how deep we actually insert the cork, or otherwise we run into cork extraction issues.
Right. Because that makes perfect sense, because back in the days, before we had lots of fancy equipment, the way we used to do polymer experiments that were at slightly elevated pressures, 2, 3, 4 atmospheres, you would literally buy a capping machine like you would use for soda bottles, and you laugh, but if you ask Professor Shork, who's an emeritus professor, this is how we used to do it. So that makes perfect sense to me. So I have a question, and actually before I do it, because we're getting near the end of the program, and I realize we haven't mentioned to our listening audience that if you're listening to us live on the 15th of November, 2017, and I have a question or comment about this fascinating topic, and we've just been hogging you guys because we think this is really interesting, by all means, give us a call at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number is 404-894-2468. So I'd like to talk about hops. And the fact that I did report you guys to the Atlanta police.
He really did.
I did. And trust me, they're not going to do anything. So you're off the hook. But we actually have a cannabis project where we're trying to extract the therapeutic non-psychotropic CBDs for little kids with seizures and things like that. So I'm very interested in this.
Let me interrupt you for a minute and tell you, last week I was talking to some students, and somehow we were talking about undergraduate research, and they're like, I heard there's this professor Georgia Tech who's going to study weed, man. Weed. He's going to be Professor Weed.
It's not quite like that. So
I was like, he's not in chemical engineering, perchance, is he?
Did they say yes?
And they were like, yes. And I was like, last name Ludovich? I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
But here's the thing. So we're very concerned about this because we're trying to extract this out of hemp. Hemp has none of the THC that will make you stone, but it has a lot of the stuff that it will help therapeutically. And it's illegal. So I follow the laws a lot. We're actually working with Alan Peake and a lot of the guys who are sort of changing the laws. And I looked up under the Controlled Substances Act that it is illegal to have a cannabis flavored product in the state of Georgia. And if you think, okay, so cannabis doesn't really have a flavor. The flavor comes from a terpene called myrcene, which is in cannabis, it's in mangoes, and there's a ton of it in hops.
True.
So if you make a really hoppy beer, technically that's illegal under Georgia law. So basically any IPA may be a violation of the law. And certainly the hop hash ale may be. Can you talk a little bit about the hop hash ale and why you made it, how you make it, things like that?
Well, basically, I mean, we were trying to use something that a lot of people weren't using at the time, because when they pelletize hops, they go through a pelletizer, and it leaves behind this like residue.
Right.
And it was basically going to waste.
Right.
And I think we were one of the first ones to start, you know, utilizing that, and it provides pretty good aroma if you add it to the Whirlpool.
Yeah. I bet.
I'm glad you did.
It's still hot.
It's my favorite of the Sweetwater beers.
Yep. So yeah, it's really just kind of turning waste into something useful, and now it's a full on thing. There's lupulin powder, cryo hops, all very similar things.
Oh wow! So new ways to sort of use other parts
hops,
of the hops,
which are like related. That. They are related.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly it. So, you know, people that don't like, so that natural smell of cannabis, which is a little stinky, are not people that typically like hoppy beers. So I'm guessing you like really hoppy beers.
Oh, yeah. John.
Yeah. It's a very strong taste, but I think that's great. Do you get people that are confused, though? Because when you see hop hash, and a hash is literally a compression of, you know, plant solids, you know, and they tend to stick together. You can process them lots of different ways. Do people get confused? Do you get...
Legitimately,
folks like Joe Pettis walking up and saying, "So what's with this?"
It's because you're from the north. You don't know that a hash is like a breakfast.
Yeah, yeah,
corned beef hash.
Oh, exactly.
I'm from the Midwest. We eat corned beef hash.
No, but the a lot of the patrons that come for like the tours and everything at the brewery, we actually have some of the hop hash that we use in the beer sitting around for, you know, just a visual aid. And people will legitimately ask on a regular basis if it contains any sort of marijuana. Right.
So they confuse it with hashish when they...
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that does happen.
Okay, good.
And we're not sure why.
Would. It's not just this crazy.
We did that.
Was it Sweetwater that had a beer, like Purple Haze?
That's actually a Beta.
Yeah, that was a Beta.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you guys make a ton of different beers, right? I'm not as much of a hoppy guy as John is, but you've got a fruit beer that's out that I had recently.
Grapefruit one.
Yeah, the blueberry
blue,
one?
Oh, they've had
talking
that
about blue, or are you talking about...
And Going Coastal. Going Coastal is our pineapple IPA.
Okay, so I haven't had that. Okay, I've had the blueberry one, and I like the blueberry one. So for those of us that are not macho dudes like John who drink the hoppy beers, how do you make these variants? How do you just put blueberries in it at some point? How do you make the blue?
Well, we use a couple different methods. With like what I'm doing in the Woodlands, I'm adding like actual fruit.
Okay.
You know, whole fruit puree.
Okay.
Things of that sort.
You add that to the wort?
We usually add it after its first fermentation, so it'll actually go through a second fermentation because of all the sugar in that
fruit. Interesting.
And yeah, that's kind of a interesting topic because, like, the vanilla notes don't come from vanilla. But there's vanillin, the compound, in the wood, and that
mixes
out.
Right.
So it's kind of cool to see where you guys use the actual fruit to get the actual flavor, or if you get something that's kind of adjacent to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot that goes into it.
Have you come across any flavor combos that just didn't work?
I have to look at Tucker for this one.
The lasagna beer.
She's gotten corporate approval to mention the
pumpkin spice beer.
You have a pumpkin spice beer.
We had over the summer we released a cucumber saison that did not take off as we.
I'm gonna put this under no bug beer.
Saisons have like a real strange profile in their yeast. It's like spicy and
it's like those Belgian ales, right? That's a saison.
Some are. Yeah. They're French and Belgian saisons. Yeah,
just like a
fancy what is a
name.
Saison?
Yeah,
it means season.
Oh, it's, okay. All right, now we're going upscale.
It's what the farmers used to drink.
Okay, and so who thought up the cucumber since?
Nobody is copying to that.
I feel like there's cucumber in cocktails. It makes sense that you'd try it in beer.
Yeah, I've had cucumber water with a martini, and it's not bad.
I totally believe it. They make this soda. It's like sparkling something. It's like a LaCroix, but it's cucumber flavored.
Yeah.
It is horrible. So much so that I bought some. I brought it into work, and it was like for a week we were like pranking people in physics. Like, hey, try this cucumber soda here. And you know the BFG, the Roald Dahl book?
Yeah.
And the BFG chops up this cucumbers to make like frob snopper something. That's what it tastes like. Like a cucumber farted in your mouth. I could have totally imagined it not working as a beer.
It was drinkable, but it just didn't it didn't take off. No.
Okay, cucumber farted in your mouth. Yeah, I'll be using that at some point.
I will confirm that there were no cucumber farts in our beer.
Okay.
Could I ask for all my chemical engineering friends, you know, like advice for them to get into this kind of field?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The easiest way to kind of probably transition, and especially if you want to, you know, craft beer is still on a small scale type deal, but I mean, probably the biggest use of chemical engineers would be the big guys. You have a lot of really in-depth analysis that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, yeah, you could, the quality control department of the craft brewing industry, is in general, there are a lot of chemical engineers. I don't know about a lot of chemical engineers involved, but that would be the easiest application.
Okay. And is that something that's growing in the craft brewing department? It sounds like it, right?
Because
in the old days, you just taste everything. And the point is, if it was small enough, nobody really cared. If you had a batch-to-batch variation, that was part of the charm of this thing. But now you guys ship all over the place, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much Eastern United States.
Okay.
And nationally with Delta, every domestic Delta flight has 420 on it now.
I have
noticed
that.
So we might have replaced some other craft, I'm doing air quotes, craft brewery up in Boston for the craft beer of choice on Delta. I would say, I honestly forgot where I was going with that.
But. No, that's okay. So, but you have to worry about the fact that, you know, quality control is more important because you're getting bigger and you're on Delta. And Delta, they want everything the same.
Right. Delta's, well, that, know. And there's also, I can't remember specifically what it is. We are now falling under the FDA regulations for normal food and beverage plants.
Okay.
So craft beer was normally able to get away from that.
Okay.
I'm not saying get away in like a bad way.
Right.
But,
expanded the law that you guys have to worry about FDA requirements.
Yeah, and it's just a lot more.
It's
a lot more care that we have to take in the production. So you know, we follow good manufacturing practice in general, but now we could potentially be audited for it. As opposed to just doing it for our consumers' sake.
So what will the future bring for Sweetwater Brewery and brewing beers? Is there anything exciting on the horizon that doesn't involve cucumbers?
So we're about to ramp up Nick's program for the Woodlands. We're about to start. To throw a little plug in there, for the Woodlands, there is a Woodlands Club that they can join called, the Woodlands Circle?
The Woodlands Circle.
Yeah, so it's actually...
Check our website.
Yep, you can go onto the Woodlands website and sign up for this club. You pay a fee and you get 6 limited release Woodlands beers that you can't get anywhere else. It's going strictly to the club members. And you also get some... discounts on tastings and merchandise.
Cool. And so this is basically the Woodlands program is this this barrel aged.
It's an offshoot of Sweetwater, just kind of show people that, you know, we can consistently make 420 all day every day.
Okay.
But we can also do these things that are a little more crafty, kind of getting back to our roots.
Okay, cool. That's good to know.
But yeah, so those what I was getting at is we're about to start releasing those very soon. So if you are interested, get in on that.
Yeah,
right
this
now.
Is just the beginning. So
yeah, we're hoping to ramp that up on a very not very large scale, but a larger scale in 2018.
All right, cool. So we've reached the end of the program, the part we like to call What Have We Learned? And we've learned a lot. I apologize for the fact we didn't really get any callers because we've been hogging all the questions here.
I make no apologies.
We learned that making beer is much more interesting to a mechanical engineer from Georgia Tech than industrial equipment inspection. And we talked about the fact that that may motivate a lot of people. We learned that water is extremely important, and actually balancing the minerals to mimic the type of water relevant to the type of the beer is very important. That's obviously very important in beer making, and certainly at Sweetwater with the Fish for a Fish program. So if you've got the three different cans, you can go ahead and stack them like Jimmy Carter did. In Georgia, if Jimmy Carter did it, that's it. It's all over. That's all you need to worry about. Actually kind of a complicated process that mimics chemical engineering. Nick may not realize this, but he's basically a chemical engineer of beer, whether he likes to say it or not. And you've got all sorts of interesting malted barley. The flavor is, can be determined by whether or not you've roasted that malt, things like that. And you go through very standard processes of grinding these things up to expose the sugar, and then or expose the starch, then breaking down the starch. So we would call it depolymerization. We do it with tire rubber, which is much more boring than doing it the way you guys do.
Not supposed to taste it between times to make sure that it's
absolutely
correct.
And then, you know, you follow this interesting process, and luckily, you know, these are done in really large batches, but the pumps have the appropriate seals, so we're not getting any axle grease or pump grease seals.
Everything's food grade anyway.
Right, so if it's food grade, then you should be perfectly fine. To produce an amazing array of different beers with different flavors, things like that. And then what we're finding is, as much as we like the glass, the modern cans and the sealing processes for this packaging is perfectly fine. It's really more of a lifestyle choice that Ed has decided to take to worry about glass. But let's face it, beer is a lot like wine. You're not selling a beverage so much as you are selling a lifestyle. And speaking of a new and interesting lifestyle, they've got an offshoot of what they're doing with their sort of large-scale manufacturing, which is now coming under FDA requirements that may lead to audits. So you guys are trying to keep that quality control so you produce these large-scale beers. But it's the Woodlands program, which involves these very interesting custom beers that are barrel-aged, come in really neat bottles, things like that. And you can get involved in that with something called the Woodland Circuit. So if you want to get Woodland Circle. And we did determine that with all the different array of flavors that you make, and the folks here in this studio are a fan of a lot of different ones, Cucumber Saison was not a big thing.
No.
And then Ed's going to double down and say no bug beer.
I want to know how much Cucumber Saison went down the drain.
A lot. Can I say that?
They're not at liberty. They're not at liberty to say that sort of thing.
Not our drains, though.
But college students would have still drinking it. You just had to lower the price enough.
Yeah, probably. Right.
So let us know if you ever have a really bad beer.
We'll come and help.
They'll take care of it. So thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
This was very educational, and I think John and I are going to work hard to perhaps get you guys involved in some sort of chemical engineering club that involves brewing. All right, that was great. And for those of our listeners that have any questions about today's show or a suggestion for a future show, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our theme music is performed and composed by Bill and Mary Hunt, and we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.